Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Hi, Reggie. How you doing, my friend? How about a little podcast action today? What do you say? All right? You doing okay? Cool. Me too. Feeling good? Voice sounds, the instrument sounds good. Feeling strong. Feeling stronger every day. Thank you, Chicago, for that. You ready to go? Good. Trigger finger. Ready to go. Star. Smile. Strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And of course, it's always good to listen. I mean, that seems to be the main driver here. But from my standpoint, it's just as important to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. And of course, if you like what you hear, you can always go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, find a prompt for this podcast, and sure enough, there you will find dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of podcasts from the past, as recent as last week and going back a couple of years. It's always good to find out where we've been so you know where you might be going. And they're not all there because we've been doing this now for 10 years almost. In May, it'll be 10 years. So the countdown is on as we are now into March with only a couple of months to go until the Big Ten, the big Ron Santo anniversary. But right now, we're one plus Ron Santo because this is episode number 511. So last week, I was talking to you about a little quick jaunt to Las Vegas that we took in order to see Sphere, not the Sphere, Sphere, at the Venetian in Las Vegas. And we saw both the Eagles concert. I believe that we saw concert number 50. I think Don Henley said that we were at concert number 50, the Eagles' 50th concert there, since they started their residency over the last year and a half or so. They'll be winding that up sometime next month, I believe, unless they add more shows. I know that they said that they were going to most likely wrap up touring, and then they haven't made an album in many years, so this might be the final end of the Eagles. But at the same time, there's always chances that they would add some shows, maybe to Sphere. But I know that they're doing their long goodbye tour in arenas. They've added a few shows to that, and I'm sure that will continue through the end of the year. And I would not be surprised, as I said before, that this tour winds up ending in Los Angeles. It would be the most logical place. I wouldn't be surprised if it was the LA Forum, where the Eagles had some of their greatest triumphs back in the 70s and 80s. It was the cool place to have a concert. Now there's the bigger dome or the bigger arena. I don't even know what they call it anymore. It used to be the Staples Center. I don't know if it's the Crypto Center now. I don't know what it's called. Every couple of years, a new company gets naming rights to so many arenas, you can't keep them straight. The outdoor facility here in the southern suburbs here in the Chicago area, in Tinley Park, I don't know what that's called anymore. That's gone through more names than any criminal who uses aliases. That place has had a lot of names, sometimes one year after the other. But anyway, I wouldn't be surprised if the Eagles wind up finishing their tour and, in effect, finishing their career, if that really is the intention, in L.A., and at the Forum. They're just so connected to Los Angeles in every sense. They were founded there. They were pioneers in the California sound. It only makes sense. And it would be fitting. So I wouldn't be surprised. And then, of course, we saw the Wizard of Oz presentation that they have at Sphere. But I came away from that little jaunt. We were only there for basically 2 days, not even 2 days, a day and a half. We got there, Well, pretty much 2 days. We got there around 9 o'clock in the morning. We left here early. I'll tell you, that's one thing that's so interesting. I don't know if you've heard, but there's this summer there may be a lot of airport troubles because apparently the airlines, there's been such a demand for travel that the airlines have, you know, added a lot of flights to accommodate this. I mean, hey, they certainly, when there's demand, they will do what they can do to serve that demand. They were expecting one of the biggest summers on record. And certainly so many of those flights either originate or go through O'Hare Airport here in Chicago. And I think now because of all the connections that O'Hare, after many years, has reclaimed the title of the country's busiest airport. For many years, in the 60s and 70s and the early 80s, O'Hare was that airport. And then newer, bigger airports were opened, and a lot of those, like Hartsfield in Atlanta, or the Denver airport, or even the Las Vegas airport, were taking over that title because of their new size and Atlanta's, you know, East Coast location. You can get over to Europe quicker from Atlanta. So Atlanta became one of the busiest. I know, I think that the big Denver International Airport, because of its central location there, close to the west, but also not too far from the east. But I think O'Hare has probably taken over the title again over the last couple of years, because I don't know if you've flown, you know that most flights now have a connection. There are still a few direct flights. Yes, you can get those. But then there's maybe two or three, and then all the rest are connections. And, of course, that makes for a very hectic travel experience for anybody to go through connections, especially if, say, the place you leave has good weather, but then you fly into your connection city and that city has bad weather, and even your destination city has good weather, that connection city is most likely in between, and that's where you can get in trouble, either between weather or the busyness. And so I think the FAA was looking at this, these schedules from both United and American and all these flights, and they said, you're going to overtax the airport, especially with air traffic controllers. Safety will be an issue here because you've got so many flights coming in and out. And so I think that's why O'Hare, because it's a natural connection place, it's a hub practically in the middle of the country, always has been. I mean, that's what really put Chicago on the map, being a transportation hub, first with the train system that was dominant in the United States, and now with planes. Chicago's central location lends itself well to be a connection. And some people leave one coast to another, or they go from the Midwest and they can go in any directions, north, south, east, or west from Chicago. And I think that's why O'Hare now has regained the country's busiest airport. That, I guess, that's good for bragging rights, but it's always not so fun if you have to fly into O'Hare or fly out of O'Hare. And one thing that I have read now is if you've booked flights for the summer already, you know, there's a good chance that your flight may be canceled unless you book an early flight, certainly before the afternoon. The first flight, they always want to get the first couple flights out because they need planes in different locations. And being a frequent traveler and frequent flyer, I've known that trick for many years. It's the later you get into the schedule of a day, yeah, it's more convenient to go a little later. You don't have to wake up as early and blah, 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 and all that. But you also have a higher risk of having your flight delayed or even canceled as the day goes on and connections get missed and flights get delayed and the schedule starts to back up. But those first flights usually always get out. A plane isn't coming from somewhere else. You don't have to worry about your plane being in another city and getting there before it takes off somewhere else. Most likely, the first flight of the day, those planes are already in the gate when you get there. And so you know you're leaving. So I always, it's a pain in the butt, oops, to take those early flights, the 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock kind of flight. But at the same time, it will most likely assure you that you get out. Now, for instance, I bring this up because we took an 8:20 flight to get to, 6:45. 6:45 flight we took to get to Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago. With the time difference and the flight time, we got there around 9 o'clock in the morning in Vegas. But you know, we had to get up at like 2:15 or 2:30. To get dressed and ready and finish your packing and make sure everything's set and then get to the airport. And just make sure you parking and line, and you want to get there at least an hour and a half or 2 hours before, just in case. And so the funny thing is, when you leave for those really early flights, I mean, 6:45 is an early flight, there's no question. And getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning, that's a long day. And then we go to Las Vegas and we get there at 9. So their day is just starting. I was literally up for 24 hours. I mean, I may have slept. We came back in the late afternoon to our room around 3 or 4. I may have slept an hour and a half, but it was a very light sleep. It was not like a deep, deep sleep. But for the most part, when we got back to our hotel after the concert, which ended at like 10:30 Vegas time, well, don't forget now, that's 2 hour difference, so that's 12:30. Our time, and by the time we, wound down from the concert and talked and just, I remember it being midnight. And so it was 2 a.m. here in Chicago, and I was like, well, I've pretty much been up for 24 hours. But the funny thing is, when you have to set that alarm for those early flights and you get up at 2 or 3 in the morning and you're, that's just, unless you work in morning radio, that's an ungodly time to get up. It really is. And I did do that for a while. When I was on the radio with Gary Meyer at WCKG, we weren't on at the morning. We were on at 8, which is still kind of morning. It's like late morning. We had an 8 to 11 shift. So we still had to get to the station to get prepared at 6 o'clock. So still had to get up at 4:30. And then I, of course, would wake up before my alarm. And so getting up at 3 or 4, that's just ungodly. That's just not natural. And that was not a fun thing to do. And people that do the morning shift on radio, they're in the studio at 6. So depending on how far they live and they want to do, research, and preparation before the show, you have to get up at 2 or 3 in the morning. It's not easy at all. I mean, once in a blue moon, okay, you deal with it, you go to bed early, but on a regular basis, that does take a toll on you physically and mentally. There's no question. You're always waking up in the dark. You're driving in the dark in the morning. It's weird. And then you're home, you've been up from 3 in the morning, and by noon, your day is almost half done, and most people's days have just begun. But the funny thing is, when you're preparing for one of those early flights, what you find out is that, when you get to the airport, there's a bunch of other people there. Guess what, sleepy pants? You're not the only one on the plane. You weren't the only one getting up at 2:30 or 3 o'clock for this early flight. In fact, the flight was full. I would assume there were at least 150, if not more, people on our plane. And so as much as it's like, oh, why did we book this early flight? You know what? There is a lot of other people doing the same thing you did, probably complaining and saying the same thing, but they did it. And you get on those early flights, so you know you can get out. And so just a quick tip, if you are planning on flying anywhere this summer, if you haven't booked your flight yet, you might want to book it, but see if you can get on the first flight out, because most likely, if the FAA cancels up to like 300, they're talking about 300 flights a day across the entire system. That's huge. And so there's probably going to be delays and cancellations if you've already booked one. So the best thing is to make sure that you can get an earlier flight. If the first one is preferred. But if you can get one at least before noon or certainly before 2 o'clock, those most likely will not get canceled. Now, they may be delayed on the day of, but I'm talking about a preemptive cancellation within the next couple of weeks, if not already by now. We'll see. I know that late mid last week, they were discussing this. So just a little travel tip. Since I'm in my little travel mood today. But my point is, we were in Vegas. We got there at 9. So we were almost there for 2 days. But I came away with a new discovery that I did not expect or wasn't even seeking. I was there excited to go see Eagles and Wizard of Oz at Sphere. Not the Sphere. Not the Eagles. Not even thinking about this. At all, wasn't even anywhere in my mind, but came away from this little 2-day trip with that being one of the main lessons to be learned from this, and it's to me it's a wider issue, but I learned something, and I've never stayed at the Venetian Hotel. I'm not getting any kickbacks on this. I stayed at the Venetian. It's connected to the Sphere. Sphere is part of the Venetian. So just stayed there for convenience sake. Just walked through the casino down this bridge and you're right there. You go right to your room. It's a lot easier than walking down the strip or taking a cab. So we stayed at the Venetian. Never stayed there. I visited there. As I said last week, the irony is I'm not a big fan of gambling, and yet I've probably been to Las Vegas more than any other city in my life just because of business and events and just leisure. You know, events I definitely wanted to see that were only in Vegas, so had to go there, Elton John's two residencies mainly. I went to Las Vegas many times over my public relations career because so many trade shows were there. I would go there 2 or 3 times a year. But I never stayed at the Venetian. So I was excited to do that because I've always heard about it. You know, they got the gondolas and everything, you know, the little canal in there to make it feel like it's Venice and everything. But here's the thing that I discovered coming away from this, and it just reinforced a long-held feeling, especially somebody that has traveled quite a bit, but regardless, the traveling has added to my knowledge on this topic. Even though the hotel room that we stayed in was not like a new hotel, it just wasn't built. It wasn't built that long ago, but the Venetian's been around for 20 years at least, and they've updated it and stuff. But, you know, and today, you know, everybody talks about, I mean, my gosh, you watch television now, and all they talk about are bathroom remodelings, right? All these companies, Kohler, Jacuzzi, bathroom remodelings. I don't know who the spokesperson is for Jacuzzi. I think she's some influencer or some home DIY person. I don't know who she is, but very attractive woman, which is probably why she's on here. But if you've ever seen the Jacuzzi bathroom remodeling commercial, I don't know who the tall, skinny, blonde woman is, but oh my God, is her voice irritating. She speaks in that sing-songy voice. You can get a shower done in your home for cheaper and updates and nice things to see. Oh my God. I mean, maybe she's some big influencer. I think her name is Christina something. I don't know who she is. But wow, that voice drives me crazy. Oh my God. I can't listen to those commercials. I have to turn them off because they are so irritating. They've swapped her out at times, and they have a like an actress or a professional spokesperson who does it as well, and she speaks beautifully in a nice tone without all that sing-songy Valley Girl thing. But wow, I mean, to hear that, you know, for a few sentences is fine, but for a 2 or 3 minute commercial, I really can't believe that they don't say to her, you really got to do something. I guess they don't want to insult her. And there's some, I mean, for some people, and I guess in some generations, that's where the way a lot of young women speak now. But wow, she really does it. I mean, that in that commercial drives me crazy. But anyway, that's all you're seeing now are these commercials for bathroom remodelings, right? We can do it in a day and a half, and you get this new bathroom, and people walk in and their eyes are, women are crying because they got a new bathroom and it's easy to wash, and you got the handrails, and you know, they got the new amenities and the new shower heads, and we can do this in a day and a half. And you know, I don't even know how much that costs. It's got to cost a good penny, because they give you about $1,500 off. And they consider that a discount, so it's probably got to be at least 20 grand, I would imagine. Just helping my instrument here, excuse me. But so here's my thing. So I know that the we stayed in the Palazzo, which is like the tower part of the Venetian. So it's got to be 15, 20, 25 years old. So nice big bathroom, very nice. Very nice bathroom, no question. I have to say, I have traveled quite a bit in my life. If you've listened to the podcast, you know I've traveled quite a bit in a lot of different countries, a lot of different cities, stayed in a lot of hotels, luxury hotels, discount hotels, midline hotels, all around the world, you name it. I don't stay at 4-star Ritz-Carltons. You know, I've stayed at nice hotels. You know, but it's not like I'm, you know, even though I travel quite a bit, I'm still very cost conscious. And so I stay at hotels that are clean, that are in a good location, and aren't going to kill my pocketbook. I don't really use room service. I don't really need valet parking. I'm not a big amenities guy. I'm a DIY guy. I do things myself. If you are lucky enough to be the maid in a hotel room that I stay in, whether it's been a week or a night, you really don't have much to do. I've talked to you, said I'm very fastidious. I don't make the bed, but I don't, you know, tuck in everything. It's not made when I'm done, when I leave the room for the day, but I certainly pull up the covers, put the pillows back where they belong, throw everything away. I wipe down the bathroom, you know, sink and the area around it, clean off the mirror if there's any spot. I mean, I do that. When I leave a room, the maid must come in. I do, you know, I throw all the towels, the used towels, in the tub so they're all in one spot. I wipe off the floor in the bathroom in case there was any, you know, water that gets on there from the sink or from the shower. I make sure the desk is nice and neat. I make sure the chairs are in place, the pillow, you know, you name it. You know, the remote is in the right spot. Garbage is not laying around. When they walk in there, they must go, wait, is anybody, do I really need to fix, is this room occupied? Oh, I guess I see a suitcase here, but wow. Yeah, no, I am practically, I should get tipped as the chambermaid. They don't need to do that much. I know there's some people that, when they stay in a hotel room, they treat it like Oscar Madison. I treat it like Felix Unger. And that's just the way I am. I mean, it's just the way I am. But like I said, I'm no big, you know, I mean, I've stayed at nice hotels. Most of them, the time I've stayed in them because of business. And they've been offered to me as a business thing, and I've stayed at some really nice hotels. There's no question about that. And it's very nice, but at the end of the day, you know, you need a nice size, a bathroom that you're not on top of yourself. You need some nice, you know, bathroom space, counter space in the bathroom, right? And doesn't have to be crazy. I mean, this bathroom was, as I said, it was big. It actually had the two basins. But, you know, as long as there's enough room with a sink for two people to put their little toiletries on the, you know, on the thing there. I'm, like I said, I'm not big and fussy like that. You know, I don't use the amenities. I don't use the mini bar. I rarely call up. I mean, I have used room service, yes, but it's not imperative. Like I said, a lot of the trips that I take are like 1 or 2 day jaunts just to do a concert or something like that. So I'm not staying for a week. But even when I'm there, when you check into a hotel, you got to give them your credit card now for the incidentals. You know, the incidentals. I never have incidentals. Never. I rarely take anything out of the mini bar. As I said, I'll call down if we need some extra towels or something like that. But I just want a nice, clean room with a nice, you know, comfortable bed. The hotel itself, I like to be in a good location, especially close to what I'm doing. Nice bathroom, doesn't need two basins, doesn't need to be elaborate, doesn't need the tub with the chutes in it. I don't need, 24-hour service, I don't need all that. I know some hotels give that now. I'm not high maintenance at all. I'm maintenance. I go in and fix things. I clean up. They're making money off of me. I should be getting paid. I should be getting a kickback for the work that I do to keep that room clean. Like I said, I've stayed at budget hotels, midline hotels, nice hotels, luxury hotels. I've stayed in them all. And in different cities around the country and around the world. And the one thing that is the most interesting in all my travels that I have found is the shower. The shower. And it's always when I get into a new room and I go to the bathroom, I've got my little toiletry bag I'm going to put out. And of course, because it's me, you know, I have a way of setting up my toiletries on the countertop of the bathroom sink. I don't keep everything in my little toiletry bag. I will take out the things that I need most. So I need my toothpaste, my toothbrush, my floss, my my mouthwash, my razor. I do have that little septic pencil, septic pencil, whatever that's called. You know, to if you cut yourself, you put, oh, it stings, but it's good. It works. I have a few other things in there in case I need them. Q-tips. I keep those things in the bag. Q-tips. Some Neosporin in case, some bandages, you know, little things like that. But the main stuff I will take out of that bag and I will organize on the counter so they are easy to get to. In fact, what I do, which I don't find a lot now, to make it. Quick to get and not so that everything's falling over and everything, I will use a glass, the drinking glass that they give you in the hotel rooms, and I will put my razor and my toothpaste, because I have the small travel toothpaste, the razor, the toothpaste, the toothbrush, and the floss in the cup. And then next to the glass or the cup, then I'll have the mouthwash and my cologne and things like that, whatever I need, you know. Next to that, and whatever else is ancillary in case of emergency, I have that in the bag somewhere near there, either underneath if there's space or on the side. All very, very organized. I don't take a vacation from organization. How's that? I like that phrase. I do not take a vacation from organization. I'm organized at home. I'm organized on vacation. That's who I am. And what I am surprised too, when you go to a lot of hotels today, like even here at the Venetian, right? Nice hotel, very nice hotel. I don't know if that would be considered a luxury hotel. I know the Wynn and the Fountain Blue and the Aria and the Cosmopolitan, those might be the higher ends. Obviously, a Ritz-Carlton or a Trump, those are more high level. But certainly Venetian is not a Holiday Inn. It's not the Flamingo and things like that. It's a little, so I would have thought that you would get a glass in your bathroom. Right? I mean, if you brush your teeth, if you're going to use mouthwash, don't you need to rinse out? I would have thought with two basins, we'd get two glasses. Most of the time there are. Now, what you can always tell the level of a hotel that you're in. Because if they do give you the glasses in the bathroom, if you're at a nicer hotel, they will be glass. And if it's a midline or a budget hotel, you may not get a glass at all. And if you do, it's most likely a paper, like a plastic one that's in a wrapper. And then you go, okay, this is where I'm at. Okay, that's fine. I'll do it. I'm not a snob, but you could tell the difference. But what's interesting is that sometimes you get no glass. Now, you get a glass that's put out in the living quarter part by the bathroom or by the bedroom or so, with a lot of, you know, hotels will have a coffee maker. And they will have, or they will have wine glasses or something like that if you want to have a drink. So they will have glasses, but they don't have them in the bathroom. Now, I'm kind of torn on this, really, because I use these glasses more as a organization tool than a rinser-outer. And if they have more than one glass, and I'll take the two glasses, and one I will use as the rinse glass, and one I will use for my toiletries. But my point is, I always find it interesting, even though, you know, I just kind of, you know, shrugged at the plastic glass. Oh, that looks kind of cheapy, right? But the thing is, when you go to these nicer hotels, as you know, most of you may know, the bathrooms, in order to have this, you know, this regal look, the bathroom floors will be like either a real marble or a fake marble, but they will be hard. And so it seems counterproductive. It's a hard surface. A, while it looks nice, it's not very convenient or practical. If you get out of the shower, tub, or even, you know, around the sink, water gets on that marble kind of floor, and it gets slippery, and it can be dangerous, because not only can you slip, but when you fall, you're going to fall on a hard surface and probably hurt yourself. So that's dangerous. B, if they do give you a glass, a cup made of glass, if you drop it, most likely it's going to shatter on this hard marble-ish surface, and now create, you know, shards of glass. Whereas if you did have a paper cup or a plastic cup and you dropped it, no harm, no foul. So what's interesting is the nicer hotels, you know, they want to have this decor, this ritzy decor with the marble floor, which is nice, but it's really not practical because it's slippery and it's hard. And they'll give you a glass in the bathroom, but that glass can break. Whereas the plastic one or a paper one might not look as classy, but it's probably much more practical in a bathroom that has a marble floor. Now, the other thing, as I said, is the shower. The shower. And that's what I'm talking about. How many times have you gone, even in especially in a newer hotel, you go to these hotels, as you watch, when you see the jacuzzi thing with the girl that sings, the woman that sings songy, you know, most people's showers now, I mean, you know, in my day, you know, everybody took a bath. Baths, we started as bathers. Look, go to any art gallery. You will see paintings from the 1800s and the 1700s and the early 1900s, and it's always bathers. People taking baths in a bathroom, bathers by a lake. It's the bathers. You will see, go online and just and go on Google or something and hit the bathers, and you will find hundreds of paintings called the bathers. We started as bathers. We took baths. Then all of a sudden, I don't know if it was I don't know what year the showers really started to become a major part of the things. I would imagine maybe sometime in the 50s, as the suburbs and new houses got more popular with the suburbs. I don't know when they really became a common thing. I'm sure that there was always showers of some consent going back to the ancient times. I'm not saying there were never such thing as showers, but I bet you the modern shower, where they were in people's homes on a regular basis, I would think a shower was probably a prestige item. But I would probably say it was probably sometime in the 30s and 40s, and certainly in the 50s, as the baby boom began after the war. The modern shower as we know it. I'm sure there's been showers forever. I mean, there's been sauna baths and all that stuff in Greece and in Rome, and so I'm sure there were some kinds of shower types of apparatus. But I mean, when showers became a normal thing in an average American house, probably in the 20s and 30s, or certainly I would say in the 40s, and I would say in the 50s. That's probably when it became a standard thing. But before that, there were tubs. So, when the shower became something that became now a new amenity and everybody had to have a shower, they weren't going to tear apart the whole bathroom. So they found a way to connect the shower head to all the piping that serves the same water that served the tub. And so, of course, most people grew up with the combination tub-shower thing. It made sense. But somewhere over the last 30 years or so, it became the walk-in shower. There was prestige to it. It was an architectural design. And suddenly you saw more people's homes with walk-in showers. And certainly you saw it start, at least I did, in hotels. And I wouldn't be surprised if, once again, it wasn't around the same time in the 40s or 50s. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. But in terms of it really becoming something where now you saw more of it in people's homes, I would say it's been in the last 20 years or so. Because it was considered, now it's not considered a luxury item. That's when people get a new house or when they remodel their bathrooms, everybody gets a walk-in shower. And a lot of times, I'm sure they probably got first experience of it by going to a hotel and saying, wow, this is nice. It walks right in. You have to lift your leg. It's a safety thing. I mean, now they have these walk-in tubs for elderly people, because it is. That tub situation is scary. You have to lift your leg over, and you're putting your leg into water on a tub, which is usually slippery. There's not a lot of friction. How many times you hear about accidents in the tub? I mean, now people even have little chairs in there. They have the grab handles and the whole thing. The tub situation and the shower situation can be dangerous with all that water and all those suds and all those slippery surfaces. It's not easy. But the walk-in shower now is pretty much standard, even at a midline hotel. I mean, there's some of the budget hotels that still have the good old fashioned. They haven't updated in many years, and so they still have the shower tub combination. But most of the hotels now, even some discount kind of places, will have a walk-in shower. They've updated. People expect it, And that's great. But once again, I don't know who's designing these things. How many times does the water leak out of the bottom of the walk-in shower? You have to have a barrier. You have to have a little levee. You don't need to have something that you walk over that you have to lift your leg, but there should be a little ledge. You've got the drain in the shower. The water should not build up, but there should be a little ledge so that the water doesn't seep through the bottom, because inevitably the water will always find an opening. We know that. And so how many times you get out of a shower, you know, in a hotel, and the floor right by the shower, I know a lot of times, you know, you put the towel there, or the little mat there to catch that, but sometimes it doesn't catch at all. It's coming off the sides, and there's water over the floor. And once again, now that's a danger. Because if you don't see that water, you can slip. So please, anybody that's putting in a walk-in shower in a hotel or in your home, make sure that there's a little barrier around the shower so that the water doesn't leak out onto the floor. Yes, I know the drain should take it, but sometimes where the way the water falls or sometimes the drain is slow, the water will accumulate with the suds and depending on how hard you have the shower working, and the water slips underneath. I can't stand that. Drives me crazy. You have to like, before you take the shower, you have to like put this brigade of towels around there to soak up the water before you even get in, which makes it hard, because how do you close the door and make sure that doesn't get under the door part? There should be a small little raised barrier there. Please do that. It's not that hard. So the walk-in shower, I enjoy the walk-in shower, but that drives me crazy when the water leaks under the door because you don't have it's even with the floor. It's crazy. It just doesn't make any sense. It has to leak out. And most of the time it does. Now, the other part of it, these walk-in showers all are supposedly, you know, now architecturally beautiful design elements. Not only are they practical to bathe and clean in, but they have to look beautiful, which is why the sing-song woman on the jacuzzi commercials is there to tell you that you need to get you can cry because you will have this new bathroom that you've always dreamed of, and most likely it will be this beautiful design element like kitchens are. Most people don't really use their kitchens to cook, but everybody has an island. Everybody has, you know, a giant sink in the middle. Everybody has burners there, and they don't even use them. Kitchens have become mostly design elements rather than practical. When you look at the kitchens in an older house, you see how small they were. And those kitchens were getting used. Houses that are like 70, 80, 100 years old, the kitchens are small, and those kitchens got used by people. There were people actually cooking in them all day. They weren't using microwaves. They were using those counters and using those stoves and using that, and that room was 1/10 the size of some kitchens today, which are not kitchens. They are design elements with the giant islands and the beautiful. Don't get me wrong, they're beautiful, but they're not. You know, everybody has their pots and pans hanging. They're design elements. The kitchen is not used like it was today, and I feel sorry for our grandmas or great grandmothers who, if they saw today's kitchen, they wouldn't know what to do with it, because they were slaving in a kitchen that was 1/10 the size, and they were working that kitchen. And today, that kitchen is 10 times the size with all these amenities, and people are using the microwave and a glass and a plate. But that's another subject. Back to the bathrooms, back to the showers. So, I get it. The walk-in shower, the nice remodeled shower is not just a practical thing now, it's a design thing. In the last 25, 30 years or so, with all these DUI shows, these do-it-yourself shows, HGTV, all that, you know, our tastes have completely shifted. Everybody, as I said, needs a kitchen with an island. Everybody needs a walk-in shower. Everybody needs the marble. Everybody needs the different shower heads and the seat and the grab thing. And it's all, it's a status symbol now. Bathrooms are status symbols. Kitchens are status symbols. And they're design elements, right? Oh, I've got my house just like the one on HGTV. Oh, well, good for you. So most of these walk-in showers, especially in hotels and in homes, now, these new designs, they all have these glass enclosures. Now, it looks great because you want to be able to see the design of this walk-in shower because, as I said before, it's a design element, probably more than it is a practical thing. So, of course, you want people to see how nice the shower is. Ooh, look at the marble. Look at the shower head. Look at the little thing where the soap goes. And it's got a little bench, built-in bench. And Well, that's fine, but the practical use of it is, I mean, look, I was an athlete for a good part of my, for more than half of my life here. I've been taking showers with other people with no barriers and everything since I was in sixth grade. Okay? So it's not about modesty. I've been taking showers with people, you know, without any barrier. You know, when I was in high school, in the bathroom, the stalls had no doors. How about that? We had no doors on the stalls in the bathroom. I don't know if it was because they didn't want people to be smoking in there and you could hide, or if it was a military thing. I went to an all-boys school, of course, but my point is there was no privacy. I'm used to having no privacy in a bathroom. I've been taking showers, with no privacy since I was, 12 years old. So I'm not prudish and it's not modesty. But when I'm on vacation or when I'm in a hotel room, especially with somebody, whether it's my wife or not, I would like a little privacy because, most likely you're getting ready at the same time. So somebody's in the bathroom getting ready, doing the washing or whatever, or shaving, and the other person's taking a shower. And, I'm sorry, but there is a sense of modesty or privacy when you're taking a shower, right? And so you do it, the other person leaves. If they give you a little privacy, fine. But can't there be a frosted thing? That drives me crazy. As I said, I'm not prudish. I'm used to that. But some people aren't. And, in a shower, you're cleaning everywhere, if you know what I mean. A little privacy would be nice, but so to me, they're more worried about the design element than the practicality. With when you have a glass shower, oh, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. Yeah, but there's also then some practical. It's meant to be a device to clean yourself. It's not a design element. It really has a practical use. The practical use should take precedence over the design element, but that's gone. That ship has sailed ever since all these TV shows, which have glamorized bathrooms and everything else. Yes, you know what's funny? When they on these shows that show these remodelings, these renovations, when they show you the bathroom, no one's in it. Right? No one's taking a shower. So yeah, with the glass and everything else and the marble floors, oh, well, this looks gorgeous. Yeah, as a architectural designed room that doesn't have any practical use, it looks great. But I've already pointed out some dangers that are inevitable with this beautiful room. What they need to show you is, what does that shower room look like when it's being used? Not this beautifully designed thing where it's all empty and the sun is coming in through the window. Yeah, it looks gorgeous. But I have to use the bathroom. I have to use the toilet. I have to use the shower. I have to use the basin to wash my face and the countertops. It's a utility. And these rooms are designed well visually, but they're not practical. Marble everywhere, slippery, water sliding underneath walk-in showers. Small countertops, small basins, glass on marble. And I'm not even, and these are off the top of my head, folks. I should work for OSHA. But that's not even what I'm here to complain about. How about that? That's not even my complaint. Oh, there's a few of them. I've given you a few, but that's not even my main complaint. My main lesson learned from my two-day trip to Las Vegas at the Venetian at the Palazzo. Because I'm going to say it right now. It's 25 years old at least. I don't know when the Venetian opened. I don't know when the Palazzo opened. But it's at least 20 years old or close to it. But I have to tell you, and I've been at showers, as I said before, all over the world in some of the best hotel chains there are and some of the most budget hotel chains there are. And the Venetian probably falls somewhere in the middle, maybe a little higher than just middle, but, you know, whatever. But I have to say, even in Las Vegas, I've stayed at different types of hotels, different levels of luxury or discount or whatever it is. And I have to say, I couldn't wait to take a shower at the Palazzo in my room at the Venetian. Now, granted, yes, there was the marble floors. There was a lot of marble there. I mean, after all, it's the Palazzo, right? It's at the Venetian. It's an Italian-based hotel, right? So, of course, Italian art, marble, Michelangelo, the whole deal. I get it. Still had to make some allowances for the marble. Yes, I did. But the walk-in shower, can't say enough about the actual walk-in shower. Yes, it did have the glass. I know. I think that's a fight I can't win with the glass enclosure, the see-through glass enclosure instead of a frosted thing. I guess that's just a battle I'm not going to win. That's the design element of today. Everybody wants to see. They spent all this money on the remodeling. They want you to see their shower head. They want you to see their little built-in bench. They want you to see the handrails. They want you to see the design of the marble because nobody uses tile anymore, of course. They want you to see in there. They spent 25 or 30 grand remodeling it. They want you to see it. Even if it's not practical, they want you to see it. Even they probably hate it for all the reasons I've just mentioned, but they're also thinking about, oh, but it looks so beautiful. Whatever. I'm a very practical guy. Don't get me wrong. I appreciate things that look nice. But I think there's a way you can make things look nice and also have them be practical. So I can't say that the Palazzo shower is perfect, because it isn't. Marble, glass enclosure, not digging that. Wouldn't be my choice. But What was great about it, why I couldn't wait to take a shower at the Palazzo, I think I've been cleanest on this two-day trip. I think I was taking showers every 2 hours. And it wasn't even warm. I mean, obviously, it was in the 50s. We went there in February. But I was just taking, I just loved taking showers there. So here's the thing. First of all, what do they have at the bottom? The little raised barrier so the water doesn't leak out from the bottom. Oh my God. Was that, when I saw that, I was like, Palazzo, you got it right. Loved it. Loving it. Right off the bat, I saw that little barrier there, and I'm like, I'm not going to have to create this dam or this levee of towels that I'm going to have to put along the entire shower thing because I know the water is going to leak out and I can come out and slip. How nice was that? But here was the pièce de résistance, if you will. I am not a fan of the rain shower. You know the rain shower? You know that shower that's like above you and it pours down like rain? The rainfall shower? I'm not a fan. Maybe it's just because I'm used to, you know, my whole life having that shower head facing me. I like the water on my face. I don't like it pounding on top of my head and dripping down my body. I don't like getting caught in the rain. I know it's romantic. I know it's in every rom-com. But most people, when it's raining, are running out of it. They're ducking. They've got their hands over their head. They put something over. They're protecting themselves from rainfall. Why would I want to take a shower and make me feel like it's raining? When I'm in the rain shower, in the rainfall shower, I'm like putting my hands over my head. And then I realize, oh, I'm not outside. The whole idea of me is to get wet here. It's just a reflex action. When it's raining, I cover myself up. And yet now I'm taking a shower in order to get wet, and I've got a rainfall. So once again, maybe I'm rigid. In my day, we didn't have any rainfall showers. We just had the shower head in front of us. It hit our face, it hit our chest, hit our body, and we liked it. Well, maybe I'm used to that. Now, I do like a shower with different kinds of shower heads that you can use, that the water comes out in different ways. I like a hard stream. Yes. I don't like drippy showers. I don't like wimpy showers. You know that Seinfeld episode? I want that shower that they use for the elephants that Kramer and Newman buy when they're getting the black market shower heads when there's low flow being put in their apartments. Low flow? I don't like the sound of that. Neither do I. I don't like low flow. I like a hard shower. I like a hard stream. Yes. So, first of all, so that's my thing. I have stayed in showers and I've stayed in hotels around the world, and we all have. The shower is the human common denominator. We all bathe. And so whether you realize it or not, you do have a preference for a kind of shower, especially if you've taken showers in different places. You may not even know it, but you know which shower head and shower stream you like. Now, we've got in our shower at home, we had the one kind of shower that did have, like, you could turn the dial, you know, those. Because it's an older shower, it's an older home. But then we installed, like, the handheld, you know, the handheld thing. We had the fixed. I don't want to say that I'm a shower savant, but, you know, there's the fixed. There's the handheld. There's the dual. And there's a rainfall. You know, I mean, those are your basics. Talk to any plumber. You got your fixed. You got your handheld. You got your rainfall. And you got your dual, you know. You got your Jets on the side, maybe. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, I think I know my showers. And but yeah, so you know what? I might sound persnickety here, but you know that you have your favorite kind of shower too. Your favorite stream of shower and your favorite type of shower. Now, maybe you like the rainfall shower. Some people like it. My wife loves it. I hate it. When I go into a hotel and I go into the bathroom, I look in the shower first thing. And I go, oh, rainfall. Or, oh, nice. Fixed. Right at me. Handheld is okay because, you know, most of the handhelds, you can fix this different stream. So you don't have to, you can have the one that just shoots right at you like a laser beam that it hurts you so much. That's the one I like. Yes. I don't like that. The light little dainty one. I need to get wet. I'm washing myself here. Yes. On a manly shower. But I don't like the rainfall. I know it's trendy. I know it's romantic. I'm here to take a shower. Because when you take the rainfall shower, it falls on your head. The water isn't really hitting you. It's glancing you. That's what happens in a rain thing. What I like about the fixed shower head is you aim it right at your face and right at your body. It's hitting you. You can get a nice suds thing going. So I like a fixed shower with a hard stream. I don't like a rainfall. I don't like a dainty little spritz. I'm here to take a shower. I'm here to get clean. Well, I walk into the Palazzo thing. There's the nice little barrier so the water won't get in. And then I look at the shower head and it's fixed. No rainfall because it's about 25 years old, I would say. Maybe 20 years old. Didn't have the rainfall things yet. And they obviously haven't updated yet. God, I hope to God. I don't know if I'll ever stay at the Palazzo again, but please don't change your showers. Then how many times when you're in the shower, okay, we've established the shower heads. How many times in the shower do you not know how to start it? Sometimes you have to go all the way around and then count and then another. You know what I'm talking about. There's many showers. You know, in my day, you had a knob that said hot and cold. You moved it to the left for hot, you move it to the right for cold, and you stuck it in the middle for temperate. You didn't need to have a booklet or a manual of how to use it. Well, you got to go all the way around and then come back counterclockwise. And then you got to hit this little lever here to make oh my God, I'm in the shower here. Let's go. I'm in a rush. How many times you don't know how to use it? You think it's, oh, well, I just will put it here. And then either scalding hot water comes flying out and you're burned or freezing cold water hits you and you're in shock because you didn't go counterclockwise or once around. Oh, my gosh. I walk into the Palazzo shower. It has the fixed shower head looking right at me, almost like a big smile. Then I look at the shower knob. Guess what? Right in the middle, right where it's supposed to be, no complications. Right for cold, left for hot. Dink, dink, pull out for the water to come on, push it in for the water to shut off. Left for hot, right for cold, push out, push in. Done. Don't need a manual. Don't need to test it out. Don't need a trial and error. Don't need to get scalded or get frozen. Fantastic. Then, as an added bonus, two little spigots sticking out in the front with little jets. And guess what? Each one had its own lever. If I want to turn the jets on, I know how to turn them on off. If I don't, I leave them there. But they weren't all connected to something else, and I got to learn how to use that now, and I don't know how to turn it on, and I don't know how to shut it off. It was right there. Each one had a lever. Oh, my gosh. What a joy it was to take a shower at the Palazzo, at the Venetian, because it was so intuitive and easy. No water getting on the floor, pulling out the knob, putting it, adjusting it to a little warmer than cold. Nice shower head hitting me in the face. Oh my gosh. Get done with the shower. Walk out. No water on the floor. Oh. Yes, the concert by Eagles was great at Sphere. Yes, the Wizard of Oz presentation at Sphere was great. But I have to say, right up there with that, with those two events that I went to Las Vegas for, the hidden gem of this little trip in my mind, and it will stay with me because it's been years since I have had a fully satisfied shower. Sometimes the controls to the shower are easy and there's a rainfall. Don't like that. Sometimes there's a shower head, but a complicated way to do it. Sometimes there's jets and you don't know how to use them. Almost every time there's no ledge, the water is leaking. But in this shower, it just combined every ease of use and practical. It looked nice. As I said, it still had the glass enclosure. It still was marble, so it had the, it was a design element. It looked very nice, but it was also practical. It was a fixed head with a nice heavy stream hitting me in the face and the body just like I like it. Easy controls to turn it on and to adjust the temperature. And also, if I wanted the added luxury of these two little jets to maybe hit me on my shoulder blades, which felt nice as well, getting a little water from right at me as well as coming on top and at me. Oh my gosh. And then I come out and there's no water on the floor because they had a ledge. Oh. Yes, the Eagles were good. Yes, the Wizard of Oz was good. But right up there with a great memory of our trip to Vegas, staying at the Venetian, at the Palazzo, God, I love the shower. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And of course, don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 511. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears. Raindrops are not falling on my head in the shower.